Congratulations! You have found the Lambcast, the official podcast of the Large Association of Movie Blogs, also known as the Lamb. The Lamb is the largest collective of online movie blogs and podcasts with 2,000 members and counting. Every week on the Lambcast, various members of the Lamb community get together to talk about our favorite subject, movies. So bookmark the Lamb and follow us on social media. Be sure to join us each week to hear a lively discussion of films and movie-related talk from our members. Join the flock at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Greetings, everyone, and Happy New Year. We're having a closeout sale this week on the Lambcast, and you're invited to check out the inventory. November and December are busy months in the cinema world, and films pile up. Some of them are wannabe blockbusters looking for holiday cash, and others are Oscar bait trying to get some attention from awards-giving groups and critics. Next week, we'll devote ourselves to top 10 lists that everybody usually does at this time of year, but I wanted to give some proper attention to those movies that just try to sneak in at the end of the year and for which we hadn't scheduled a regular show to cover. Our shoppers today have their carts full and are ready to check out. Let me introduce them to you now. From Mad Lab Post, doing the self-checkout, it's Nicole Ayers.
Hello. I am so glad to be here with the deadly passion.
Well, we're glad to have you. I'm not sure about the deadly part, but I'm glad that you're passionate about it. The Forgotten Filmcast has Todd Liebenau bagging all of our purchases.
Merry New Year!
The Pop Art Podcast is doing a price check for Howard Kasner.
Hello, hello. It's too expensive.
If you're blogging by Cinema Light, you'll bump into James Wilson on aisle 12.
Oh, sorry. I bumped into something.
Thomas Stoneham Judge of Four Real Movie News and Reviews is trying to push a cart with a broken wheel through the film market.
And of course, as we know, shopping requires lists, and that is what we have brought.
And Movie Rob prefers paper over plastic when shopping for his films, but he's probably not going to be here for an hour or so we'll catch up with him later. No games this week, but there is an exit question when we get through the films that we're going to talk about today. So the idea here is pretty simple. We're going to take a couple of minutes to talk about a film released in the last 6 weeks or so, and if anybody else wants to talk about it as well, we'll all join in. We'll rotate through the guest list, and if anyone has more than 5 films that they want to cover, we'll just see what the time looks like when we get, deep into the show. Nicole, I am an old school guy. I'm going to say it, ladies first. So you're up. Do you have a film that you want to share with us first?
Oh, thank you so kindly, Richard. The film that I would like to share is Ferrari. I'm not sure if any of you have seen that.
I'll be joining you in that discussion, yes.
Yes,
I will too. I saw it Friday.
Great, yay! So that's the film that I wanted to share. I just saw it this weekend, and I was so happy. I'm not sure what some of you who have saw it thought about the film, but I am very I liked it. And it exceeded my expectations going in, actually. And I'm glad that I chose it over a few others because it was a toss-up between Ferrari, Society of the Snow, and Saltburn. And I only wanted to see Society of the Snow because people stranded after a plane crash in the snow reminded me of the movie Alive with Ethan Hawke. But I like NASCAR. And it's been a while since I've watched the races or attended the races. And I really wanted to go to the road race in Chicago this year, but I couldn't make it. So I figured watching Ferrari would give me a chance to experience a road race once again. I do want to give a shout out to Penelope Cruz, only because I had I liked her performance, and I was pleasantly surprised with her performance as Laura Ferrari. I questioned Michael Mann's casting of her when I found out that she was playing Laura Ferrari. I just wondered, like, why Penelope Cruz? Not that I don't like her. I do like her as an actress. I just wasn't sure why she would be cast to play the Italian wife of one of the biggest automakers ever known to man, if you will. But I was happy with her performance, so I'm happy about that. And I think I might go watch the movie again, only because the AMC that I saw it at, it was like the closest one, and the theater was disgusting. I did take some pictures, so have that. But going in, that's my fault. Understood where I was going. Yes. And my mother, I told her about it later, and she's like, you need to get a refund. But I'm like, I need to watch this for the podcast. And, you know, she's all about, we would have just left. But, you know, I think some of us movie lovers, we tend to put up with some things if we really, really want to see a movie. And I really did want to see this, and I didn't feel like commuting for 40 minutes to get to the next theater that was showing it. So it is what it is. AMC, you need to really check out your spot in in North Philadelphia. But anyhow, I'm so happy with this movie. It didn't feel like it was 2 hours. And so I do appreciate that. On one hand, I think Ferrari is inspiring in terms of like pushing yourself to the limits to achieve greatness or excellence. But on another hand, I think Ferrari is a cautionary tale for extreme forms of sports and recreation. Once upon a time in cinema, football coach Tony D'Amato said that in a fight, it's the guy who's willing to die who's going to win that inch. And fortunately or unfortunately, in Enzo's Ferrari's case, you know, they really embodied that statement to a fault. I do have, you know, some other thoughts about this movie, but I am curious, if someone else wanted to chime in terms of like whether you liked it, whether you didn't.
Todd, you saw the movie. Why don't you jump in at this point?
I enjoyed it quite a bit too. It did surprise me a bit. It was a bit more, I guess, low key than what I was expecting, especially out of Michael Mann. But I think he does a very effective job. I think with what Nicole was saying there, that Penelope Cruz is the big reason to see this film. She was just fantastic. It's one of those cases where I was watching it and going, oh, well, there's your front runner for best supporting actress right there. I think she does a really, really great performance. I don't want to discount Adam Driver. I think he was great as well. I'm not a car guy at all, and the film sucked me in. So I enjoyed it tremendously.
Thomas, you've got something to say, right?
Yeah, I'm going to go. I appreciate that you guys love this movie so much. I just figured I would insert my not so positive opinion so that whoever follows can be positive and it can be a compliment sandwich. I was not a fan of this movie at all. It actually might be my lowest rated movie of the year. But y'all make some really great points about Penelope Cruz, though. That she did work in this movie to like, for me at least, keep it interesting. And I love what she was doing with her character, and she kept me engaged. I just could not get over the terrible Italian accents in this movie. It's like
you were saying you could not appreciate what they were doing.
Oh, that was better. Cast you instead of Adam Driver. There's so much about the cat. I guess I'll just say two things. The two things that really bothered me a lot was the Italian accents and the absurd effects, visual effects. Car crashes were just over the top. And I guess my thing about the film is that if you're going to take this level of absurdity, the terrible accents, the I guess maybe intentionally weird looking car crashes, then I needed more absurdity. I think the movie was so grounded in naturalism that when absurd stuff happened, I was like, what is this? What am I watching right now? But again, I always love to hear when people like movies that I didn't. So I'm thoroughly entertained by your guys' comments on it.
Well, I want to check and make sure that there isn't somebody else who wants to chime in on this. Howard, you saw the movie as well?
No, I didn't. I never could find the right time to go.
All right. Well, I have thoughts as well, but I don't want to cut anybody else off. So I'm going to go in and dive in. I'm probably closer to Thomas's position than I am to Todd and Nicole's position, but I did like the movie. I didn't dislike it. Thomas, it sounds like he actually actively disliked the movie.
Actively, one star on Letterboxd.
Yeah,
not a great experience for me.
I thought it was a well-made film. It was fine, but it was not what I was looking for. I was expecting to be engaged with the car material and have a story about like Nicole kind of talked about, the passion of making cars that are perfect, that are super competitive. And you get a little bit of sense of the competition kind of issue from the script. But I thought that the movie had less to do with the cars and everything to do with the soap opera that was going on. And I did not appreciate...
That's valid.
What's that?
I said that's valid.
Yeah, it really felt like I'm watching a movie that should be about racing, and instead it's about this man and his affairs, and I don't care about them. I'm sure that they were important to the people who were involved, but I couldn't figure out why they should be important to me and why they would be compelling. I didn't find them particularly compelling. Shailene Woodley, I don't even know why she was in this movie. She had almost nothing to do except show up in two or three scenes and barely spoke. I don't know if she had 10 lines in the movie. It was strange that that's what the focus was going to be as the counterpoint to the Penelope Cruz relationship with Adam Driver's character of Enzo. I just, like I said, in the racing segments I thought were pretty good, but the thing that of course is dramatic about them are the crashes, and this film features two horrific crashes. And I'm afraid that the way that the film is being sold and the way it came across to me is that it confirms that stereotype that most people go to the races to see the crashes, not the race itself, because that was the stuff that was most interesting.
Well, that is what made me watch hockey a little bit growing up.
You went to the fights and a hockey game broke out.
So I haven't been. It's crazy. I had I've had tickets to hockey games over the last 2 years and just never made it to local hockey games. But I used to watch it on TV with my cousin because they would start fighting years ago. Now, recently someone told me that that there were more regulations for that, and that has died down a bit. But that is why I used to watch hockey when I was a teenager.
That's why I stopped going to circuses.
Well, I don't like going to circuses for that reason. I just felt like everyone's there for when that trapeze artist falls, and there's no net.
Ouch. All right. Well, does anybody else have other thoughts about Ferrari before we move on? Obviously, it's not going to be on Thomas's list at the end of the year, but it sounds like some of you liked it well enough to maybe say it's a top 10 type film.
I do. I have just a few. I totally I totally understand your take, Richard, on wondering why Shailene Woody was in the movie because of the few scenes that she appeared in. For me, I just thought that maybe Michael Mann was trying to sprinkle in different aspects of Enzo's life to give us an idea of the weight or the magnitude of what this upcoming race meant for Enzo, considering all of the other things that he was I guess, managing on the back end of his life. I think that a lot of people, even us, maybe whatever, I think that a lot of people say, I'm thinking, I don't know much about LeBron James, for example, but someone was talking about him recently, so he comes from Ohio. So I was having a conversation with my mom about Ohio. She mentioned LeBron, for example. I know he's a basketball player, and because he's not my favorite, I know that he's from Ohio. Like, I know his hometown, and like there was like controversy when he switched teams or what have you. But because he's not my favorite, like, I like Ray Allen from the Celtics, who was on the Celtics, and a couple of other players. So I don't know much about him, but I would imagine that him and, say, like Kobe Bryant, they have a lot of other things that are happening behind the scenes before they walk out on that court. And so I just figured that maybe, given that this movie is, from what I interpret it, was about Enzo trying to keep his company afloat. Like, he's not selling a lot of mass-produced cars to bring in enough money. So his company's like hemorrhaging money, and he's being advised to, you know, like, bring on some financing, you know, from other automakers, or, you know, if you want to keep this company afloat, then race in this dangerous 1,000-mile race that takes 11 hours and is known for, like, killing people, like, there's no room for error. And yet you have your marriages on the rocks, and then you have this other dynamic going on with another woman and child that you may or may not acknowledge or what have you, yet you have to be focused on the task at hand. I imagine there's like a lot on Enzo's shoulders in this moment. So I interpreted Shailene Woody's role as like a glimpse into one element of Enzo's life and what was going on, like, while he has to win this race that has like a 50% mortality rate, according to Michael Mann. That's how I interpret it.
Well, I have a different theory as to why. I bet most of her stuff ended up on the cutting room floor. So when she agreed to do it, it was a much bigger part.
I absolutely believe that. I mean, again, with the accents, she was probably the worst offender on that one. And I actually think her character, this will be my last thought on this, I thought her character would have been played much better by Sarah Gadon. I thought that Sarah was entirely wasted in this movie, and I love her as an actress, and I think she would have, for whatever little part that Shailene played, I think Sarah would have really crushed it.
All right, so we're not going to recast Ferrari right now. We're not going to rewrite the script. Everybody's had a chance to say what they wanted about that film. Let's move on. Howard, what film have you brought for us?
Well, I sort of feel a little guilty about this because I feel like I'm going to be robbing it from other people. But since I'm first, I'm going to do it anyway. Biggest surprise of the year, Godzilla Minus One.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
It is. I mean, on Facebook, I said that all the critical praise has been going to Oppenheimer and Maestro, and I'll throw Barbie in there. And this movie was better than all three put together. So exciting, very different from other Japanese Godzilla films, because it's much more grounded in real people and real problems. And I think it also has something to say about Japan coming out of World War II, that they need to choose to live instead of choose to die, and Godzilla sort of brought this out in them, that they had to make this choice. But Americans don't really get blamed this time around. So I just thought it was an incredible film.
I agree 100%. I talked about this extensively a few weeks ago when it came out on Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I was thrilled to be a guest on that episode. And Godzilla Minus One is one of the best movies of the year. It's a, like Howard said, it's a very different approach to Godzilla than what we've seen in anything before. And yet has a lot of stuff that just keeps it very true to the history of Godzilla. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, if you're a fan, as you watch it, you're just going to, it's going to tug at your heartstrings a little bit there. But yeah, the big thing about this is this would be a great story if Godzilla was not in it at all. It's just got a great human story. I cared about these characters. I was intrigued by the struggles they were going through post-war. And yeah, it was amazing.
Well, I'll echo some of the things you said. I'm not sure that I think it's better than all the other films that Howard mentioned, but it is definitely an excellent film. It's, you know, I'm not going to tip my hand too much, but I will say it's on my list for next week's show. It's an excellent film, and I like the fact that they're doing the movie right. The focus is on people, not just the monster and the destruction. That's part of the story, but it can't be the whole story, or else it just gets to be we're watching it for the mayhem, and it's mm-hmm. we might as well be watching a Michael Bay film if we were doing that. This is a lot deeper. I appreciated the fact that they set it in the immediate aftermath of World War II, and we're watching, you know, a nation try and rebuild itself after the war, and there was a lot of obviously difficulties that they faced, economic issues, you know, people losing family members, just it was tough, and the insertion of Godzilla into that kind of heightens the elements that we're talking about. I it also made a little bit more sense to me that it's really a story about, it's not a story about how nuclear testing is so dangerous, although that's a part of the story. Godzilla pre-existed the nuclear tests, so it's just one of those things where we've made things worse, but it was not good to start with. And I kind of like the idea that this is an ongoing thing. And it would be interesting to see how you follow up on this, because it seems to me like this is obviously I don't want to give away too much, but it's quite possible that Godzilla might return.
Really?
Oh yeah. Imagine yes. that.
Imagine that after 34 really? Films, 35 films.
The only unbelievable plot turn is that the Americans refuse to get involved in taking Godzilla down. And the reason for it is really stupid. But I'm going, America is occupying Japan. They have military forces there. They have bases there. They're going to do whatever they can to take out Godzilla because they're at risk as the Japanese. But they wanted to get the Americans out of the story.
Yeah, they didn't.
Which I can understand.
They don't factor in at all. I mean, it's really a story about Japanese redemption after the war. Right. This is their chance to redeem themselves, so to speak. When I was on that other podcast talking about this, we actually ended up comparing it a little bit to Rambo: First Blood Part 2, because it's like it's the we get to win this time concept.
There you go. I like that comparison. That makes a lot of sense. Anybody else have thoughts about Godzilla Minus One? By the way, I had to dig around and try and figure out what the heck the Minus One was all about. I get it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Todd, what film have you brought for us to talk about?
There's a bunch, but I think I want to talk about The Iron Claw.
All right.
Oh, let's go. Yeah.
Which
is a good one.
Actually, like two of my favorite movies of the year deal with wrestling. I really liked Cassandro from earlier in the fall, but I really enjoyed The Iron Claw. It's for those that don't know, tells the story of the Von Erich family, kind of a wrestling dynasty, and just a family that has just had lots of tragedy that they've dealt with in all kinds of different forms. But I mean, beyond the tragedy aspect of the film, there's just a lot of good stuff here, just in terms of the family dynamic, and, you know, seeing, you know, kind of the things that matter to these individuals, the things they struggle with. You know, I think there's just a great kind of spirit of camaraderie between the brothers. I think that all of the brothers, all the actors that play the brothers, do a great job. But I mean, completely surprised by Zac Efron as a parent who sat there growing, you know, with his kids watching High School Musical on the Disney Channel over and over again. You know, I'm just amazed at what Troy Bolton from High School Musical turns in here as a professional wrestler. It's a performance that I don't think is getting the praise that it deserves. I think he really does a great job here. Also, Holt McCallany as the father, a great performance as well. It's tragic. It'll break your heart. It's exciting. The wrestling scenes are great. You know, again, not an area of culture that I'm terribly into. Like, I don't know much about car racing. I don't know much about wrestling. But this movie, I thought, was a real treat. It is very sad in parts, but it is very good.
Thomas, you definitely have things to say because you've got your hand up.
Yeah, I want to say positive things now. The Iron Claw is definitely something one of the late year movies that I strongly recommend. For all the same reasons that Todd was talking about, I think this is the best ensemble performance of the year. Mm-hmm. And it makes me wish that there was an Oscar for ensemble, but if so, this would be the shoo-in for me. Echoing the sentiments about Zac Efron in a lead role, I wish that he could get this nomination this year, but it's so
it'll be tough. It'd be great if he did, but it'll be tough.
Yeah, because you know what, A24 did a very interesting thing with this in waiting so long to get it to viewers. There was really no marketing campaign for it that I remember. It didn't go to TIFF. They put Dream Scenario at TIFF instead. And this is clearly the more award worthy movie. So it's so interesting, the marketing campaign. I wish I could talk to A24 to see, like, was this like last minute push at the end of the year intentional for a campaign, or like did they not know what they had on their hands? Like, I don't know, but it's really great just for the performances. Certainly worth watching. I just want to praise the ensemble cast for it. I think that there were a couple things that some friends of mine had said about pacing, which kind of makes a little sense to me now that I've seen it, and how it may not be paced the best. But I still think it's a very engrossing story, a very tragic story, you know, really sad. And for the last time, the cast really, really holds this movie down so well.
Is there somebody else who's seen this movie that wants to comment on it? Because I have comments also.
Go for it.
All right. Well, I saw the movie. I was kind of interested in it because I'd seen positive talk about it online. But it was not something I was planning on seeing, except that my daughter, for some reason, wanted to see it. Maybe she's a Zac Efron
fan. Imagine
friend,
that.
You know? So I went to it. We went and saw it. And the screening we saw, it was kind of a couple of day advance screening. And the director and two of the actors did a Q&A. Afterwards, you know, it's one of those broadcast Q&A things, so they weren't.
Oh, yeah.
What I didn't understand is this is a film set in Texas, and they were in Brooklyn. And I'm in Texas watching the movie and going, hey, why aren't you here doing this? That seemed a little strange to me.
I had the same reaction to Boys in the Boat.
So the film, I think, is excellent, and it is just filled with all kinds of bad news for people. I mean, I didn't know anything about the story. I'm not a wrestling fan. I will say I learned a lot more about wrestling watching this movie than I learned about car racing watching Ferrari.
Sure.
And that's one of the reasons that I liked it a lot better. I think one of the problems with Zac Efron not getting as much attention as he ought to is that it's a physical performance more than one of those obviously dramatic vocal facial performances. This is a guy who has sculpted his body, is doing all kinds of physical activity that requires all kinds of training, planning, choreography, thinking ahead of time, and he carries it out excellently. And I think that the actors branch tends to think of this as stunt work as opposed to acting. And for years they've screwed actors who turned in fantastic physical performances and gotten no plaudits for what they've done. Harrison Ford has probably been in 3 or 4 films where if it wasn't Indiana Jones, he would have been nominated.
Yeah, I think you make a very good point about the physicality of the role. I think that he does do the dramatics of the role as well. But yeah, it's really the physical components of this role that really sets him apart as an actor, and is why I think he should get a nomination. I just wish that there was a bigger marketing push. A24, come on guys, you have gold on your hand here.
Sounds like I should check this out. Like I deliberately skipped this movie, like The Iron Claw, when I was looking at movie tickets and I read the synopsis. I just wasn't interested at all. And then I looked at the cast and I liked some of the people, but I was just like, yeah, maybe I'll catch it on streaming or something. But it was so not, even though it was on my radar, it was so not on my radar in terms of interest in it at all. And now I want to go see it based on you guys' experience, especially given that it seems like, much like the racing, I am the wrestling fan, sort of, too. I grew up, one of my friends in high school was on the wrestling team when I was growing up. So I've been familiar with wrestling since a teenager. I didn't necessarily like it as much then because I thought it was kind of dangerous, but it was also entertaining watching men, you know, sweating, muscular men move around. So I enjoyed that aspect of it. And I'm also a fan of the fake wrestling as well. So growing up, I watched the WWF matches and, you know, WWE and like all of that. So I've been someone who's been totally into wrestling. And now I'm going to have to turn around and check out The Iron Claw, a movie that I was deliberately skipping this season.
Well, it isn't a happy movie, so it might be the kind of thing, yeah, you can wait until mid-January to see it, assuming it's still in theaters, because that'll be a good depressing season to see this good depressing movie.
it is really sad.
Yeah, well, I was watching it and I was going, you know what, this prompts me to think somebody should make the Badfinger movie because it's almost as depressing as the history of that band. I don't know how many of these people have to die in order for something to get attention. And this family just went through just miserable stuff, but they also had their high points. And the characters were, I'm with Thomas. I thought the ensemble was excellent.
Looking forward to it. So maybe I'll schedule it for January.
James, are we going to Seattle in the boat, or did you have something else that you wanted to talk about?
Going to London in the boat. It wasn't even Canada. Yeah, I had one that I had really low expectations going in, was kind of cynical about it, and I walked in with very low expectations, and I came out thoroughly charmed and thinking it might be one of the best movies of the year. Wonka.
What?
Yeah.
I saw it too. Go ahead, James. I have thoughts too.
We all have thoughts, those of us who've seen it, so go ahead.
It you know, there was no reason for it to be made. It's a prequel to Willy Wonka. Somebody needed to make money. We're All Dolls family wants to update the property. Great. They cast Timothy Chalamet, who is so ubiquitous, you think, well, what, you know, do I need to see another Timothy Chalamet this year? And you walk in the movie. It takes about 20 minutes and one dull song to get going. But once it does, and Willie loses his money and has to stay at a flop house, the movie starts to take off. And it never relents. I just thought it was thoroughly charming all the way through. I thought the songs were really clever. I thought Timothy Chalamet is ubiquitous because he's so damn good. And I didn't want it to end. I thought it was that fun a movie. And it knocked off a couple of earlier movies off of my list of my favorites this year. You know, I had the same reaction to it that Nicolas Cage and had to Paddington 2. This is so good. It's the best movie. So, your thoughts? I don't have much more to say.
Well, my first thought is that your Nick Cage justifies bringing back Celebrity Lamberty. So you should be looking for a call from Jay on that in the not too distant future. Thomas, you want to chime in on this?
I'll chime in really quickly on this one. This is another one that I appreciate when people like it a lot. I didn't dislike it. I think that it wasn't quite my type of musical. I had just watched The Color Purple before this, and I wasn't super high on The Color Purple either, but I like that music more. And so, you know, transitioning from The Color Purple to A Day or Two Later, going to the music of Wonka, in this season of musicals, apparently.
They're doing well at the box office.
And
nobody is, none of the studios are promoting them as musicals, you know,
marketing. I want to have conversations with people about that choice.
I got to think this bodes well for Mean Girls in 2 weeks, but we'll see.
They're following the same format. But so I wasn't super high on the music, but I will say, I will echo James's notes about how charming it is. It's certainly very charming. Timothy Chalamet helps with that. I think the whimsicalness of the movie is charming. Like there is enough to keep you entertained and make you feel good about it and about seeing it. So it's certainly not that I dislike that I spent time on it. I think there are just some personal preferences in the storytelling and in the music style that didn't quite appeal to me. But definitely charming, lots of charm.
I enjoyed it. It was a movie that I wished I had been able to take my daughter. My daughter's big into musicals, and I know this would have been right up her alley. I think it's very sweet. I agree. The songs are a lot better than what I was expecting. And you know, it's that wonderful kind of fantastical type of feel that, you know, I kind of associate with going to the movies at holiday time. So that worked very well. The thing that I kind of struggled with a bit, and it didn't really gel in my mind until as I was leaving the theater, but I was like, this is not the Willy Wonka, you know, I grew up with in terms of the 1971 film, because with Gene Wilder's portrayal, and certainly with Johnny Depp's as well, but you know, Gene Wilder is the one that sticks mostly in my mind. There is a sinister quality to that Willy Wonka. You know, he is this fanciful character, and there's an aspect to him that the kids are just amazed with and all that. But there's also this sense that this guy really doesn't care that a kid gets sucked into the pipe or a kid goes down the garbage chute or whatever, you know? And so that kind of slightly sinister quality is missing from this version of Willy Wonka, which I would have liked to have had that. But what they give here, I do agree with James. I think it was very charming.
Well, see, I think that it's a prequel. So I think what happened to Gene Wilder's version is that he cracked under the pressures of food product, you know, industrial food production, and that turned him into what he was. And I'm looking forward to that sequel.
I was going to say we need a second act because we've got the first act and the third act here. We need that middle second act to show what turned Willy Wonka into the cynical, less user-friendly version that he is in the original film from 1971, from this, you know, avuncular charmer who's innocent and outgoing in this particular film. I found the film completely delightful. Unlike James, I didn't think that the opening song was the failure. I thought the opening song was the high point of the music in the film, and I loved that some of the subtle ways that they connected to the original film in the movie. There's one point where he's taking the steps back up backwards.
Yes.
And they do that just briefly. I mean, they don't linger on it. They don't make a big deal out of it. And I'm just going, there, that's nice. That's an acknowledgement that this is connected to this universe, but it's not exploiting it in any way. And I like that. And I like the look of the film immensely. I've got to be honest with you also, you know, I'd be like Nick Cage. Both Paddington and Paddington 2 were fabulous films from my point of view, and this really feels a part of it. You know, it's the same director, Paul King, I think, and I think he's got an affinity for these kinds of films. Plus, you haven't mentioned we get cranky Hugh Grant.
Yes.
Hugh Grant isn't in the movie enough. I mean,
yes.
I could have gone with more Hugh Grant.
He has a small part.
Well, anybody else want to chime in on Wonka before we move to the next confection that we're going to be talking about? We're good. Well,
I'm curious to know what you guys ate while watching.
I had pizza, so I was in a good place.
Violet Crumble. Which is
okay.
I didn't eat anything. My jaw had dropped pretty early on in the movie. It would have made a mess.
All right, Thomas, you're up.
So I had one in mind, but then I realized that I don't think it's come out yet. I'll just make an honorable mention. Zone of Interest is on my top 10 list for the year, which...
Oh, God. I so want to see this. I'm reading the book right now. I can't wait.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I'll just throw that out there. But I guess I'll touch on one that I briefly mentioned, if you guys haven't covered it on the show yet, and that's Dream Scenario.
Yeah, go ahead.
Dream Scenario... was so good. I had missed it at TIFF, but watched it in December. You know, Nick Cage, we always show up for Nick Cage, right? He's going to do something interesting. And this is certainly a more dramatic role for him, and he does it well. And the movie just has such an interesting story about just the rise and fall of that can happen in celebrity, and there's some notes about consumerism, and it's just so interesting the twist that happens. Like, you think you know where the story's going, and then it'll do this weird pivot, and then it's going in a different direction, and then you kind of get in the vibe of that, and then it does another pivot and then goes in a different direction. It's such a wacky story, but it's also interestingly enough, so cohesive with what it's trying to say to me, and how I experienced the film, and everything just worked. I mean, it's funny. It's I think there's a lot that's relatable, or at least that's understandable when it comes to I guess just what this character is going through and the relationships he has in his life, and the challenges that he goes through. And And yeah, I just had such a fun time with this movie. I saw it twice and enjoyed it even more the second time. It's a fun, wacky one, kind of a one of those hidden gems. I would say it's one that you kind of throw on because Nick Cage is in it, and then if you vibe with it, you have a really surprisingly good time.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot as well. It's another one that I'm kind of hopeful as an outlier on a Best Actor nomination.
Won't.
If he didn't get nominated for Pig, he's blacklisted. It's just never going to happen for Nick Cage.
He's just overwhelmed by competition this year. It opened too late, and there doesn't seem to be a Oscar campaign for it. So. Yeah, sorry.
But, I mean, he's great. He's great in it.
I really want to see this film, but
I'm really surprised that Todd saw it, because I know that he doesn't get out to the movies as much as he wants to, and so far I think he's seen everything that we've talked about.
this year has been a good year for me. I decided with my work schedule the way that it is, I'm usually free on Friday afternoons. I splurged for the AMC pass, and I go just about every Friday afternoon now. So I've been a much better new movie watcher than I have been in years past. I think I've been to the theater more times this year than I have since probably I was in college. Is the last time I've been to the movies this many times in the year. So I'm more up to date. I feel good, and yeah, Dream Scenario was a lot of fun. The only thing that didn't work for me about Dream Scenario was the ending. The ending seemed off kilter, and I was like, I don't quite get this, but didn't spoil the film for me.
Well, I'd agree with you guys. I think that it's a very interesting film, and Nick Cage is doing good work here. It goes dark pretty quickly, and I kind of like the way that it's talking about the dark side of social media and the way things can turn quickly. It's almost a commentary on cancel culture. There are a few places mm-hmm. where we get some obvious references to that. Some of the visualizations, the dreams, were pretty disturbing, and I'm not sure that people are ready for that, because the promotions that you see, the trailers that they've run, make it feel a lot lighter than it actually is. It's got some pretty dark stuff in it. It reminded me a little bit of that film from criminy. How can it? Ben Stiller, Jiminy Crickets, a few years ago, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. We're kind of getting, it's kind of like the dark version of that, because we are getting different versions of this character, sometimes they just seem innocuous, and he's kind of riding with the flow, and then it turns a little bit, and it's like, no, this is a little bit more serious. But it's definitely a worthy film. I didn't put it on my final list. I liked it quite well, but Nick Cage, I think you're right, he's the standout in the movie. Well, it's my turn to drop something in here, and everybody's mentioned something that I was thinking about talking about, which is perfectly fine. I'm going to go with my big gun first, because I do have a couple of other films that I'm going to throw in here, but nobody has mentioned it yet, and I'm not sure how many of you will have had the opportunity. Howard and I were planning on doing a show on Maestro, and it just got complicated. It was just Howard and me, and it was going to be last week on Christmas Eve, and I said, nope, we're not going to do that. Howard, did you get to see the film?
Yes, I did.
Excellent. So you'll be able to follow up on me either one direction or the other, so we'll see how it goes. I was really impressed with this film. I liked it a lot, and I think that it's largely attributable to Bradley Cooper and some of the choices that he makes. It's a little odd, the directorial choices that are being made here, but I think they work for the most part. Leonard Bernstein is one of those towering 20th century figures that everybody is vaguely familiar with at this point in time, but was probably so much more significant and important 50 years ago that they would not be ignorant of him. I'll ask Howard if he remembers any of those young people's concerts that used to be on the television that Leonard Bernstein you know, hosted and then talked about the music. That's, I have a very vague recollection. I was very young when that kind of stuff was going on. But it seemed to me like there were episodes that I saw, and I'm not a classical music expert or aficionado, but I do have an appreciation of it, and one of the reasons is because of the work of Leonard Bernstein. And this is a story that isn't just, it's a biopic, but it's not one that goes through the traditional biopic kinds of elements. It's not about every one of his big accomplishments. It's about him as a person. And believe me, he's a lot more interesting a person than Enzo Ferrari. You know, he's got passion like you can't believe. He's indifferent to what other people think about some of the choices that he makes in his life. He is in love with his wife, but he is he's a serial philanderer, and it doesn't matter what he ends up in bed with or who he ends up in bed with. He seems to be very happy with same-sex relationships, and that sometimes is a problem. And I think it was really interestingly presented in the story that he never felt it was a problem, but it was a source of conflict with his wife because of the social conditions of the world at the time, not because she necessarily had some objection to that lifestyle. She seemed to understand it from the very beginning, but she was put in an awkward position because of cultural expectations about people, and I think that was the point of the film, that this, you know, kind of the way the culture was formed a wedge that maybe distracted and produced harm in their marriage that wouldn't have been there otherwise. There are two or three scenes where the music is strongly emphasized, and I love those scenes, and a little bit like Ferrari, those are the scenes that stand out as being, you know, the high points, the kind of the climax elements of the film. But I didn't feel like I was waiting for those scenes the rest of the time because I was engaged with what was going on. And Carey Mulgrew is just phenomenal as his wife. She is terrific. And if you are looking for a front runner in the best actress category, she's the one that I would put my money on. Howard?
Well, I wouldn't put my money on her as the front runner. I'm trying to think of who that's supposed to be right now. Lily Gladstone is second.
And Emma Stone? I just can't quite
remember. Emma Stone is number one, yeah. But Carey Mulligan is supposed to be nominated. And that, for me, she steals the movie, gives the best performance. She's really good. I thought it was just okay. On Facebook, I said that it's about as good a movie as any movie whose sole purpose of existence seems to try to win the lead actor an Oscar. And it's just okay. The directorial flourishes, I thought, were not so much unimaginative as cliched. And I think probably the reason why it doesn't quite work for me is the structure is kind of, it's just a series of scenes from his life. There's no real conflict. There's no real, nothing is ever really at stake. There's nothing really major going on. I think it might have worked better if it had been Carey Mulligan's story instead of both of their stories. Sort of the same problem with Killers of the whatever. That it should have been Lily Gladstone's story instead of Leonardo DiCaprio's story. Because I actually don't find Leonard Bernstein very interesting in this movie. So I never had an emotional response to it. I didn't think it was bad. I just, you know, just thought it was there.
Well, when we're talking about whether or not the characters are interesting, I thought Bernstein was very interesting, but he is not necessarily a likable character. And Carey Mulligan's character is not that interesting, but she is very dynamic in the performance, and that, like you said, that I think she, if she steals the movie, she steals the movie. I'm perfectly willing to accept that because I thought she was great. All right, well, we're back around to where we started. Nicole, did you have another film that you wanted to talk about, or was Ferrari just the one that you wanted to highlight?
It's the latter. I'm going, you know, Ferrari's just the highlight for me, you know, today. But I will say that some of the movies that were covered here are movies that I was on the fence about watching, and now I do want to go see them. Maestro is one, unlike The Iron Claw, where I was just like, oh, maybe I'll check it out one day in the future, but I wasn't going to see it. Maestro was one. Was it out? Was it out when the Hangovers was out, or no?
No.
Okay, so I was...
No, it was released for 1 week before the Netflix.
So
I
when
saw
it
on Netflix.
Gotcha. When I went to see The Hangovers, not too long after that, I was like looking at Maestro, because that was something that I was thinking about checking out in the theater. It seemed very, very interesting to me. And but for some odd reason, I just ended up skipping it. It just wasn't enough there for me to go, I gotta see it now. But it was on my list, like to check out in the theater. So I am interested in watching that and The Iron Claw, and for some odd reason, Wonka now. But I think I want to watch that with a piece of chocolate.
Yeah, even
though I'm not into musicals, I do tend to watch them, and so I should probably do like a binge, because I haven't watched any of the Wonkas. I'm familiar with them, but I haven't watched them. But the dream scenario is something that I'm very interested in. That, Maestro, The Iron Claw.
Well, I'm thankful that Netflix took the time to put it in theaters for a week, because that allowed me to cover it. On my site, that's all I do is, you know, it focuses on things that I see in the theater. And if I hadn't seen it in the theater, I wouldn't have reviewed it, and I would probably have dismissed it as another Netflix film. I was glad that I saw it in a theater. I look forward to seeing it again. Todd, did you have another film that you wanted to mention?
Well, there's a lot of different places I could go here. I actually was thinking of talking about one that was a disappointment.
Sure.
And if we're on the subject of Netflix films, let's go to Rebel Moon Part 1, A Child of Fire.
I got 15 minutes into it. I said, no. I'm out of here.
Zack Snyder, of course, this, you know, kind of notoriously, he pitched this to Lucasfilm as a Star Wars project. I mean, all those that love to complain about Star Wars, I mean, they do have some wisdom, and this is proof of that. I was very intrigued by this, because watching the trailer, you're going, yeah, it looks like Star Wars. It looks like somebody else doing their version of Star Wars, and I'm open to that. And as it gets going, the setup, I was kind of intrigued by the setup. I was liking Sophia Boutella and was intrigued to see where her character went and such. The story then basically becomes The Magnificent Seven, or Seven Samurai, or Battle Beyond the Stars, whatever you want to call it. You know, there's been Bug's Life. There's so many versions of that story, okay? And I don't have a problem with that either, because I love The Magnificent Seven. And then it just kind of goes along, and it keeps adding these characters to things. And I'm going, okay, we've added somebody new, but they're not contributing anything. And where's this going to go? And then it just comes to a stop, gives us this conclusion that wraps the whole thing up, and it ends. And plus, we know there's another one coming, but it doesn't feel like it's really giving us anywhere to go after that. And I was just like, it feels like they just ran out of an idea, stopped, but then somehow have another sequel to go. It doesn't make sense. I mean, visually, there's a lot of intriguing stuff going on. You know, I mean, Zack Snyder, I guess, love him or hate him, he's always got some creative things going on there. But this just fizzled for me. And it's something that I was really intrigued to see based on the trailers and such. Big disappointment.
And Howard, it fizzled for you after 15 minutes?
Yeah, but for me, I think one of the big problems is the lead actress isn't very good. She really can't carry it. But yeah, after 15 minutes, I said, nah, I'm out of here. That's the one thing about seeing things on TV. You know, I'd sit through the whole thing in a movie theater, but on TV, I'm out of here.
It's easier to bail. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yes.
Well, what did I? What last year? I think I got 45 minutes into Triangle of Sadness, and if I had been in a theater, I'd have probably finished it because I can't remember ever walking out of a movie simply because I hated it, although I've wanted to several times. Triangle of Sadness, I just turned that off and said, nope, I don't need that in my life.
Oh, I love Triangle of Sadness.
So did I. Oh, Richard. What are we going to do with you?
Well, you know, recommend a movie where vomiting is not the main dramatic moment of the film.
That was the main dramatic moment. There are some other good moments, but that that was so good. They put it on the poster in gold. It was wonderful.
Oh, my.
Howard, did you have another film that you wanted to talk about?
Definitely.
All right.
This is going to make my top 10 list, Anatomy of a Fall.
Ooh, let's talk about it.
What I put on Facebook was I just saw Anatomy of a Fall. Wow. Just wow. It's actually a rather simple story. A man falls from a man's body is discovered dead, and apparently he fell in some way from the third story of this chalet in a remote part of France. The question is, did he kill himself or did his wife kill him? That's basically all the movie is about. But Sandra Hüller is so incredibly good. And for some reason, it's just fascinating. And the trial scene itself, which goes on for a very long time, if you want to know the difference between the American criminal court and the French court, this really tells you the differences. I'm not saying one is any better than the other, just this shows you all the differences. But this was one of the best movies of the year as far as I'm concerned.
What was that miniseries a year ago based on the American story about whether or not the guy pushed his wife down the stairs?
Oh, yeah, The Staircase. Mm-hmm. I think they fictionalized it as Staircase or The Staircase.
You know,
I think he did it.
It sounds like a very similar kind of story
I think
scenario.
It's, well, it's more ambiguous here.
Yeah,
than that one.
I think that is liked about. Sorry, I keep cutting you off.
No, that's okay. I was going to say, go ahead.
I think that's what I liked about Anatomy of a Fall is how ambiguous it is. You make a valid point about noticing the differences between the judicial systems and. You know, if you know even a little bit about law in America, you'll definitely pick up on like, oh, that's not how we do it here. Yes. But
they would be objecting to this, and they would be objecting to this. And they would say, objection. No,
because there are plenty of times in the court case in the courtroom where like, you know, there testimony's happening and or there's some kind of conversation going on, and I'm like, that's not normal, but okay, cool, that's how it happens here. But I do think that it's a very interesting court drama, and that's really the essence of the film is a court drama. It's certainly a mystery in the sense that the court drama is trying to get to the bottom of what happened to the husband, but it's, you know, it's just one of those things where you're parsing through, you know, what little evidence you have and trying to make sense and fill in the gaps and this testimony. And Sandra Hüller, of course, gives a very compelling performance as the character. And then, of course, depending on what you believe, the character giving a performance, you know, in the courtroom. So yeah, it definitely is very interesting. I don't know, like, it is a mystery, but I don't know if I would recommend it as a mystery because not the point. But there is a mystery component to it that really fuels how interesting and how engaging this courtroom drama is.
And you two are the only ones who've seen this, right? Because I have not seen it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
It's in my queue on the computer.
I rented
it's being added
on
to mine.
Amazon.
Okay. So it's available now.
Yeah.
All yeah, right. I rented it on Amazon for like $6.
Okay. All right. Well, this sounds like it's worth at least $6.
Well, that's what I thought. I'm not going to pay $20 for Dream Scenario as much as I want to see it.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But I'll pay $6 for Anatomy of a Fall.
All right.
And Godzilla Minus One sounds like it has a discount this week.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Minus one.
It took a moment. We got there.
It was there.
I'm obscure, man.
It's a blue light special on our show.
On his back.
James, do you have another film that you wanted to pull in?
Nope.
That's okay.
The holdovers I liked.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
Well, we did talk about the holdovers on the show last month, and I think we were all pretty enthusiastic about it, so I'm glad that you liked it as well. Thomas, did you have another movie that you wanted to cue up?
You know, I do. It's not going to make any lists, but I really want to get your guys' thoughts on it. And I don't know if you guys did a show on this. I don't think so, but Leave the World Behind on Netflix.
So I think that it's a very interesting and intriguing movie. I don't think I bought it that
well,
the U.S. would be so
great.
Unprepared, but it's a very interesting movie.
Here's the thing about Leave the World Behind. Is I watched it twice because apparently I got in trouble for watching it without my husband, and so I had to watch it a second time, which is okay, right? I'm learning lessons. Make sure to ask if he wants to watch.
You got to be careful about that in a relationship, you know. For 20 years after it happened, I got crap from my wife about Lone Star because I went to see it without her, and she was pissed for 20 years. She held it against me. So yeah you got to be careful about that kind of stuff.
that's why Matt Damon hasn't seen Downton Abbey yet because his wife went ahead and saw the first season without him, and she says, well, I'll go back and watch it. You know, I'll tell you what happened, and then we can keep going. He says, I don't want you to tell me what happened.
No, exactly right.
See myself.
So I watched Leave the World Behind twice, and the first time you watch it, there's a lot of like mystery here, and Sam Esmail, is that how you pronounce his name? You know, I'm obviously a big fan of Mr. Robot, and he really does know how to drum up that suspense, create that that level of mistrust between characters and what's going on, and really, you know, getting the audience engaged with trying to piece together what's happening. And that is certainly the case with Leave the World Behind. You spend the movie, when you watch it the first time, really just trying to piece together the pieces that are out there, and that happen as the movie goes on. And you get to the end, and depending on how enamored you were with the puzzle that you have to put together for the film, you will either find it enjoyable or you might find the ending a little disappointing. I found it enjoyable, and I was positive on the film overall the first time, because I did like being engaged in that puzzle. But the second time I watched it, under any level of scrutiny, the whole movie falls apart for me. there's so many things that are put in the film as like misdirection components, but are just entirely irrelevant, I guess, and really kind of actually work against what it's trying to reveal. And so I'm watching and I'm just looking at all these misdirecting clues. I didn't get the connection between there's a component that has to do with nature in this film that I didn't get the connection between that and the main theme.
I mean, I think that was I think that was very interesting, but I'm with you. Where I'm going, I think we can say this is they're trying to warn us, and I'm going, are they?
Are they? Like, really? Do they know what's going on? Like, how would they?
I mean, I've had encounters with deer, and they're not that smart.
No. especially when you figure out what's actually happening. It's like, I don't get why that was such a big theme with nature. So that's a big thing that's like misdirection in the movie that ultimately doesn't really have a connection, in my opinion. And so really, I think the most that you can get out of this movie, is the vibe, the suspense vibe, the mystery vibe. Logically, it makes no sense.
Right. I just didn't believe that the U.S. could so easily be, I mean, who would be able to do all this? I mean, it's just not.
Two teenagers really, in China. Isn't that what they said?
Yeah, I'm going, yeah, this, yeah. So, but it's a very interesting movie, and I actually do recommend it.
And I love the fact that just as it was coming out, Tesla recalls 2 million cars.
Did that happen?
Oh, that is a great scene. That is a great scene. One of my favorite scenes. Get in the car. Get in the car.
Oh my gosh, that's okay. On a spoiler episode, we have to talk about that. Like, why is this scene happening the way that it is? You do know that you don't have to do that, right?
Oh, I like this idea that Thomas just subtly suggested that we should have a spoiler episode of the Lambcast. Yeah. I like that idea. Let's, you know.
There you go.
Sometime this next year, we're going to have an episode where the whole point is to spoil a movie for people.
Rosebud, you know, is sled.
Everybody has to come with at least two or three, reveals that are going to. He's dead.
Absolutely spoil movie.
Yes.
I would love to spoil Saltburn. I would
if we were going back around, Saltburn would be one that I would mention just to figure out what I missed that everyone liked so much about, because it's also a film. It's also a film that has so much misdirection that makes no sense.
Right, exactly. Once you find out the big reveal, you're going, well, that's interesting, except now nothing is believable or convincing or makes sense.
Yeah, watch the second time. All of the clues are like, really? I was supposed to understand this from that? Like, that makes no sense.
Yeah. So we inadvertently added Saltburn to our list of films that we're talking about here, which is perfectly fine. Has anybody else seen it besides the two that have already mentioned it?
That is what I was going to watch before I opted for Ferrari. But I actually, now that I know that it doesn't make sense, I don't feel bad that I chose, that I bought the Ferrari ticket, because I opted out of Saltburn because I like, NASCAR and everything. But the trailer, I've watched the trailer multiple times to try to figure out like what is going on. Like, I still didn't know what the movie was about. Like, I read the synopsis, but then even watching the trailer, I was just like, I don't understand. So I'll put a pin in this to watch later.
Take a pin in it.
Yeah, I think that'll be one that I wait until there's not a charge to watch it online.
It's on Amazon Prime. You can watch it on Amazon Prime
free
now.
Amazon Prime. Yep.
And I don't have to pay for it?
Correct.
No, because it was produced by Amazon.
Fair enough.
Yeah, Saltburn is a movie that I would recommend watching all the way up until a major reveal, plot twist happens. After that plot twist, turn it off. Like, you don't need to go through the rest of the movie. It's really good up to that point, and it feels to me like, oh, well, we have to make a twist, so let's make it really twist. And I'm just like, you lost me.
Yeah, I'm going, no.
It sounds like there wasn't a lot of cohesiveness in Saltburn the way that they were able to do it well in Dream Sequence, based on the description of that movie, where the twists were kind of made more sense.
It wasn't so much cohesiveness as it's just nothing is believable.
Oh.
It's just 100% not believable once you find out the twist.
Not only is it not believable, it's just entirely implausible. Like, there's nothing, nothing real about this story. There's no way that would, that anybody would
ever happen. Yes.
Am I making people want to watch it now?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I know that it's going to come up on next week's show because I have a couple of people who are scheduled to be on the show that have already indicated that it's one of their favorite films of the year, and I'm going, geez, now I need to see it so I can mock them.
Well, you may like it. Who knows?
Prioritize it.
Stranger things have happened. Let me dump a couple of films in here to mention that I don't think anybody else has either seen or is interested in talking about, but I was kind of interested in talking about. One is Silent Night, which is the John Woo film.
I saw that.
All right. And I like the idea. I thought it was an interesting experiment. I just didn't think it worked. You know, this is a movie where it's a revenge film where the protagonist basically doesn't speak for the entire film. And there's no real dialogue in the movie except sometimes you get some radio talk and crosstalk on phones in the background. And there's one whispered line of dialogue, but most of the film there is, you know, it's all done like it's from the silent era. And I don't object to that. I understood what was going on. I appreciated a lot of things. I could be engaged in it. I just think that some of the stuff that makes these kinds of revenge films work requires verbalizing some of your frustration a little bit. And that was missing from the film. I like the look. I'm a sucker for revenge films. This should have been right up my alley. It should be one of those movies that I recommend to everybody 1,000 times. But it was just okay from my point of view. And so that was kind of a disappointment. It's got some of those John Woo touches that everybody knows about. We get flying through the air, shooting guns, and there's even a bird lifting off at one point or other. Howard, what did you think of it?
That was just okay as well. I think the problem is that it's not enough John Woo. If this had been made in Hong Kong, and where he would be given more free rein, I think it would have been just an incredible movie. But it's just very bland and very okay.
Bland is the way I thought about it too. So it's a little bit movie awkward that way. Changes. Yeah, we got Movie Robert joining us here. Which is probably good because we're running low on films to talk about. Rob, welcome to the show.
Hey, welcome, guys. Welcome to me. Nice seeing all of you.
Yes.
So we've chimed in on a number of films. Let me mention what we've talked about very quickly. And if you have a thought or an idea that you want to say about any of them because you've seen them, let us know. We talked about Ferrari, The Iron Claw, Godzilla Minus One, Wonka, Dream Scenario, Maestro, Rebel Moon Part 1, Anatomy of a Fall, Leave the World Behind, Silent Night, and Saltburn. And so have you got something that you want to say about any of those films?
I've seen six of those. You know, I've seen part of some of them. Which are the ones that I've seen? I've seen Maestro. I liked Bradley Cooper's performance, but I didn't like the movie as much.
Okay.
You know, I thought something was lacking, but the performance was just amazing. What other ones did you mention? A Dream Scenario with Nick Cage. I'm not much of a Nick Cage fan, but I did like what they did here. I thought it was a very fun idea, very unique. I wish they would have explored things a little bit more. The whole dream aspect, you know, like there are some movies which it's fun to know, it's fun not to know what's going on. But then there are some that you still want to understand the mechanisms of what's going on in the back, you know, what type of things are happening. So that was one of them. Saltburn. I got to say, I hated it. I thought it was really, really boring.
Well, we had two people who just said that it was so incredibly implausible. There's a twist. Don't tell us what the twist is. We're going to do a show on spoilers at some point. There's apparently a twist in it that suddenly renders everything implausible, and you just were bored by it, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had The whole time I kept saying, I really wish that I was a person who can turn movies off in the middle, but I can't. You know, I have a rule. If I start watching a movie, I got to keep watching it. So, you know, I made it through it, and I'm still alive. You know, so that's a good thing.
Yeah.
It won't kill you.
No. Anatomy of a Fall, I really enjoyed it. I thought that was really well done. The way that the story is created, and the back and forth between, you know, the courtroom scenes and showing what happened from different perspectives and stuff like that. I thought it was a very clever film. I'm, as most people who know me know, I'm not the biggest fan of foreign films. So that was my one caveat, you know, that I had to actually pay attention to the subtitles of everything that's going on. So, you know, it could be worse. I'm trying to think of what else you guys just mentioned. I can't remember what there were a few.
Let me give you a chance
Rebel,
to jump in.
Rebel Moon, once again, Rebel Moon is one of my favorite movies of the year. I thought it was amazing.
You'd have been on the opposite end of this discussion because, boy, did people it here.
The first person I've heard say something positive about that movie.
Okay.
So tell us why you liked it.
I like being unique.
No, it's great. I love hearing when people like movies that other people don't. This is great. I want to hear about it.
I don't know. It's just, I was drawn in right from the beginning. You know, it's to me it was a combination of like a Dungeons and Dragons type of fantasy film where they're slowly picking up. You know, like I loved Dungeons and Dragons. So the whole idea of you're going on a quest and you're picking people up along the way. You know, and that's what they were doing here. You know, as they're gathering together all of these people, you know, to do something that's sort of like the Magnificent Seven type of idea that, okay, we need someone who's going to, we need to gather, gunslingers to be able to defend us. And the idea here is that, you know, they, instead of going just from town to town, they're going from planet to planet, trying to find people that are going to help them along the way and stuff like that. And I mean, I really liked a lot of the twists and turns throughout the movie. I like the fact that they're starting to give us some background on some of the characters, but not all of them. And, you know, there's so many great surprises of things that you don't expect to happen.
Well, you're probably one of the few people who's looking forward to the 4-hour extended version of this.
Oh, very much. Very much.
If I might interject, there's
going to be one. Is there supposed to be one?
Yes,
I think so. Is the 4-hour extended version with the second part?
I have two things to say really quick. I have not seen Rebel Moon yet, so take my feedback with a grain of salt. But there's the reason I have not watched it is because it sounds like a mashup of two movies that I really didn't care for. Like, it sounds like we already had the Star Wars, not Star Wars film this year, and that was The Creator. Visually stunning and amazing, but the story was meh. So, like, we already had that, and then I already know how disappointed I was with how Dune just abruptly ended. So when you put those two together, it just didn't sound like something that I would care for. That's the first reason why I didn't see it. But the second reason, on top of this rule that I have with Zack Snyder, is that he's a phenomenal visual artist, but not a great storyteller. On top of that, I hate that we are giving a director this ability to make a bad movie and then wait and then expect him to make it better in an extended cut. Like, most filmmakers have to get it the way that they want it the first time. And so, like, okay, we gave the leeway when Justice League, you know, that whole situation happened. So yeah, let's make the Snyder cut. But like, if you're
which going was to not an improvement in my opinion,
not enough of an improvement to me, right? And I have my own reservations about that too. But if the expectation now is Zack Snyder is going to put out a terrible movie, let's just wait for the Snyder cut. No. No, no, no. Most filmmakers have the one chance to get it right, you know, with all the same complications, all the same barriers and hurdles to get over. Most filmmakers have the one chance to get it right. We made that, we embraced the Snyder Cut for, as a community, we embraced the Snyder Cut for Justice League, but I just don't know if I'm up for making that a new expectation.
So you're not going to be watching the 4-hour Napoleon.
I definitely agree with what you're saying about that, but think back 20 years, okay? when the Lord of the Rings came out on the screen. You know, mm-hmm. we all flocked to it. We all loved it. And then a year later, we got the extended cut. Most people who are fans of Lord of the Rings will now only watch the extended edition, even though, mm-hmm. you know, each of the movies is about 4 hours long. So
you're
you know,
right. But what happened saying, with, what happened with Lord of the Rings
there's
is
no
that...
room.
Mm-hmm. Lord of the Rings is interesting because it was good. It was good the first time, right? Lord of the Rings was real. The theatrical cuts of the movies are my favorite versions. I mean, I like the extended versions, but I can see how people gravitate toward the extended versions. But if you just have the theatrical cuts, it's still a great trilogy. So like, I think maybe that's the difference is that I don't like the idea of I'm just gonna put a subpar film out and cash in on an extended edition. You know, that would be.
But do you think that's what he did? You think that's what Snyder said? He said, I'm going to give a subpar movie. I think it was just maybe they didn't want to let him release his vision at this point.
Yeah, maybe.
But I why? It's Netflix.
Right.
You know,
he had a blank check. Right.
Because people are already sitting and watching a 3 hour three and a half hour Scorsese film. Four hour movies. Can we make people watch this year? I don't know.
Oh, you don't go to film festivals. Oh man, you haven't heard about Dry Grasses yet, have you? You haven't heard, like there are actually a lot
no,
of these.
I have
like,
no idea what that
hours.
Is.
They have there when if you do the festival circuit, there's a lot of these like 3 hour, 3.5 hour films that come out a year, and you try to watch as many as you can, but it's exhausting.
I love long movies. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I really do. I'm a big fan of long movies that will tell such a great story. But
I get what you're saying. For the mainstream, it's not very conducive. I get that.
Yeah.
Rob, was there a movie that you wanted to bring to the show for a discussion?
Well, I don't know if you guys spoke about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
We did not. Did you just get that? Because okay.
Everyone is silent.
Well, we've kind of been focusing on films that were released in the last 6 weeks, you know, here at the end of the year. And
you're only talking sorry, I thought you were talking about movies that were in 2023. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
I thought it was looking at the whole entire year.
No,
just for the record,
right. So
Spider-Man
stuff that's only
is part of
the last 6 weeks.
Yeah. Yes, no, just for the record, Spider-Man is one of the best movies of the year. Just for the record.
Here, so here. I'm assuming, amen. Howard, it's in
I
top
agree with
10.
You on that, Howard.
I said so. I'm assuming, Howard, it's in your top 10.
Yes.
And then the next show.
Coming next week's episode.
Coming up on the Lambcast, and once again, I'm going to remind everybody who's listening to the show this week, if you are interested in sending me your list of top 10 films for 2023, either as an MP3 file or just a regular file, I'll read them on the show if you send them to me in an email. And if you send me the MP3 file, as long as it's not more than 2 minutes, I'll be happy to play it in the show as well. So anybody listening, keep that in mind. And make sure that you participate in next week's show as well.
And is there a deadline for this?
Well, next week, yes. You would probably need to send it by.
Send it by December 31st, 2024.
No. We'll record next week's show on Sunday, and I need to have whatever people want to send in by Sunday because I start editing the show on Monday.
And if you do it by December 31st, 2024, it'll be in the director's cut.
That's right. that'll be the 4.5 hour Lambcast.
Zack Snyder's giving a cut. There you go.
The Kirkham version.
It'll be
there
the Zack Snyder cut of the Lambcast.
All right. Well, it sounds like we've exhausted all of the films that we were going to talk about. Is there anybody who has another film that they wanted to check in with before we say goodbye to everybody? But we do have an exit question, so hang on a second.
I don't, but I do want to send a kudos to the short film Yellow. I was looking up the Oscars short list for the short films. And that made it so it's on the short list, and currently being considered for a nomination in the category of Best Live Action Short. I saw this movie and showed it in the fall, back in September, I think, or October. It's a great short film, so I just wanted to say congratulations to the team behind that one.
Good deal. Good deal. We're going to take a very quick break for some words from a fellow Lamb podcasting show, and then we're back with our exit question of the week.
You are about to witness history in the making.
Hi there, this is Todd from Forgotten Films, and if you spend all your time watching new releases, then you need to broaden your movie horizons. And a great way to do that is by joining me for the Forgotten Filmcast. We don't talk about the new releases, we don't even talk about the classics. We talk about the movies that time forgot. On each episode, I'm joined by another film blogger to discuss a film that may or may not be worth rediscovering. So look for the Forgotten Filmcast on iTunes, Podomatic, and wherever you find great podcasts.
Well, we're back. It's time for the exit question of the week. We've been talking about films that we saw here at the end of the year, but we had a whole year to see films. Next week, we're going to talk about the films that we like. This is a chance to talk about something that we are not all that happy with. I asked everybody to be able to identify the film that they thought was the worst 2023 film they saw this year. So we're going to ask you to participate in that discussion as well. Rob, I know you need to go first, so can you tell us what was the worst 2023 film you saw this year?
For me, it's a toss-up between something that we discussed a little earlier, Saltburn, and Priscilla. You know, I did not like that either.
Oh, I liked Priscilla.
Priscilla also was something that was very grueling to get through. It was, you know, it reminded me a little too much of what was that? I can't even remember the name of the movie last year about Marilyn Monroe.
Blonde. Did you just name Jacob Elordi's two films this year?
It's quite possibly.
That's funny. Okay. I also didn't like.
Okay, Priscilla, so I guess his movies are just not my kind of movie. What can I tell you?
And Thomas, you didn't care for
it. You know, I didn't care.
I mean, you guys know my thoughts on Saltburn, but I also did not care for Priscilla.
Okay, at least we agree on this one.
yeah, we do.
I enjoyed Priscilla, so there.
James, how about you? What was the worst film that you saw this last year?
65.
Oh, that was the Adam Driver. Other
that
Adam
did
Driver
come
film.
Out this
don't,
year.
Don't yeah. tell Jay that.
Adam Driver and did it have sharks in 65? I don't remember.
Dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs. For me, it was just horrible, and I kind of walked out of it just grumbling. I like Adam Driver; he was the best thing in it.
Yeah, for me, it was just like we said, very blah, and I've forgotten that I'd seen it. So
yes.
It's one of those.
You know, natural. It was a natural healing process.
All right. Howard, how about you? You got something that was pretty crappy?
No, I can't say I have anything that was pretty crappy. Just one that I was disappointed in and had a difficult time getting through. Since Saltburn has been mentioned, I don't want to over-exaggerate and say this was terrible, but The Color Purple was really difficult for me to get through. I think it is a really good score, but emotionally I was not connecting to it at all, like I did with the original version and with the book. So I don't know why. I have to be honest, I'm not sure why I didn't like it, but so it just didn't.
Not a bad movie, but one that didn't connect for you.
Right.
Okay.
It just felt like it checked boxes, really. Like, I didn't.
That's part of it, yeah. Yeah.
Nicole, you got something that you didn't like at all?
A part of me wishes that I did. I don't know if I can think.
Don't wish that on yourself, Nicole.
I don't know if I can think of a movie that I saw this year that I didn't like, but there have been a lot of trailers that I saw that I didn't particularly care for, and so two of those would be the Napoleon trailer. It didn't make me want to watch the movie. And Evil Dead Rise, that trailer kind of freaked me out. But even though the latter isn't a favorite trailer of mine, I imagine that the fact that the Evil Dead Rise trailer freaked me out, that means that the trailer was effective given the genre that it's in, but it's not my favorite, nor was Napoleon.
Fair enough. I like the fact that you defaulted to trailers. You know, when I say the worst film, sometimes I just mean the film that you like the least of the films that you saw this year, you know, and that if you're careful about your own curated films, you know, what you're going to see, you're less likely to see something that's terrible. If you're indiscriminate like some of us are, you'll find plenty of things that you didn't care for.
In that case, yes. Damn.
What'd you think of it?
It's Not the Good Boy. Based on what you just said, I thought of a movie I didn't particularly care for, and it's a short film, and shucks. Called The Good Boy, but it's a short film, and it's called The Something Boy, like The Smart Boy or what have you. Damn.
You're trying to find it. When you find it, we'll find it. You can pop back in. That's not a problem. Okay. Meanwhile, Todd, how about you? There's got to be something that you saw since you're finally going back to the movies more often.
Yeah. Well, and I always have to kind of separate in my mind because – like, I struggle with calling a major release the worst film of the year because there's so many, like, direct-to-video things, and I do watch some of those, you know. So when it comes to major releases, I would say Strays. The, you know, dogs talking dirty, stupid. But if I have to be honest, the worst movie I saw this year is a direct-to-video thing called Puppet Shark. Which, you know, the whole shark movie craze thing. And I mean, I feel a little bad saying this because I really honestly think from watching this that it was written and performed and created by kids. And, you know, of course I watched this because it involves puppets, very cheap, terrible puppets. When I worked as a puppeteer, one of the things I did quite a bit was train children how to use puppets. And, you know, give me an hour with the kids that do this movie and I could make a much better movie. On the one hand, I don't want to, you know, be cruel and all that because they're kids. But at the same time, you know, take a little time, learn how to do this. It's almost unwatchable. So, yeah. But major releases, Strays, definitely. I'm just not in on the, oh, yeah, let's take something that's a kid type concept, like a talking animal movie, and making it dirty. It rarely works, and it did not work here.
Oh yeah, because they tried the same thing with the Muppets a few years ago, and I know you didn't like that.
Happy Time Murders. Terrible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thomas, something that burned your buns. Man.
How do I narrow this down? So you guys know my thoughts on Ferrari. We're gonna skip that one. You know what? Let's be controversial. I'm gonna mention three films, and I'll do this very quickly. I was not a fan of All of Us Strangers. And that one, has that come out yet?
Yes.
I think it did. Yeah. So All of Us Strangers, I was not a fan of. I was really disappointed with what they were trying to do with the setting of the film and the characters. I think the theme of the movie about loneliness and depression and connectedness, I think that was apparent, but I didn't like the arena that they put it in. It just was too ambiguous to me, and so I didn't care for All of Us Strangers. I think this just released this week. I also was not a fan of American Fiction. I know that won the TIFF Audience Award. There are a lot of people that I know that did like it. That's awesome. I just the satire that they do in the film just didn't resonate with me. So I'll make those my two honorable mentions. But I'm looking at my list. I am reminded that I did see one film at TIFF that was just an entire waste of talent, and that was the film Finest Kind. Could not recommend that movie more.
I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, good.
Okay.
You know, it's, I'm trying to, Jenna Ortega is in it. Who else is it? Finest Kind. It's a decent cast. Tommy Lee Jones, Toby Wallace, and Clayne Crawford is in it as well. So it's a great cast, but man, is it melodramatic and is it poorly written, and just it's such a TV movie that this cast was overqualified.
All right, well, it wasn't on my radar, and now I have to avoid turning on the sonar because it should be below the surface, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm gonna forego the opportunity to bash Barbie one more time and make it my worst film of the year.
Oh no! I wasn't a part of that conversation.
So
let's do that another time.
We'll get to that another time. But I will mention a film that I literally, you know, I like writing about films. I like talking about films. I could not say anything about this movie more than a sentence when I saw it. So I'm going to kind of repeat the sentence. It's not fun, not scary, not worth it. Five Nights at Freddy.
I remember that, reading that.
It was, I know it's a video game thing, and the people who made it a huge success are all gamers who were looking for Easter eggs that they're going to find from the game that they play. But having never heard of the game before, I don't play video games. I've told people this before, the last video game I played, I think, was Space Invaders.
But you've been to Chuck E. Cheese's, haven't you?
It's been 25 years since I've been to a Chuck E. Cheese, you know.
Me too. That means you love something.
There is a good version of this movie, though. It's called Willy's Wonderland. But yeah, Five Nights at Freddy's was just dreadful. Blah. Dreadful. Yeah, there's nothing about it.
You know, and
which does remind me of another film. The film I actually hated.
All right.
And what is it called? Is it Army of the Dead or something? The heist film in Las Vegas.
Zack Snyder again.
Oh yeah. God,
it was so stupid.
I think that was last year, the previous year.
Bad. Was it? I thought sure I saw it this year.
Well, you probably saw it this year, or two ago. I think it was a little bit older.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. Nicole, did you find the name of that film?
Yes, I did. And thank you, Richard, for clarifying that it doesn't necessarily have to be the worst movie of the year, but something that it's our least favorite. So back in the fall, I saw a short film by the name of The Stupid Boy. Now, this is a film that played on the film festival circuit, so it didn't have like a wide theatrical release. It's 15 minutes. It's directed by Phil Dunn in the UK. And the premise goes, London is being terrorized by Christian white supremacists. And while a broken man is being groomed for the next attack, an autistic boy from Brixton sees the world in a different way. But seeing things in a different way can be dangerous. according to this movie. And this is my least favorite film, even though this movie has gained a lot of buzz, actually. And there are at least festival goers, a lot of people who've seen this movie, they like it. For me, I think it was a bit over the top. It does have great acting in it, but like the other movie mentioned earlier in this podcast that might be good as a TV movie, I think this would play well as like an after school special about bullying and like religious zealots or something. I think that it's my least favorite because the climax is kind of ridiculous for me. Like, you mean to tell me that if you're up against a terrorist, the way to like heal the world is to make sure that people receive more hugs? That's just not practical. Like, suicide bombers.
Yeah, let's hug our way away out of the suicide bombing. There you go.
Exactly. Like, that's just completely.
We just need to hug it out.
Exactly. Like, and that, for me, the movie appears to suggest that, which in itself is kind of dangerous, because if I had kids, I wouldn't want my kid watching that and then thinking, okay, when you come across a bad guy, all you need to do is hug him. No.
Don't run from them. Run to them.
Yes, you know.
Hug them and then take their jacket and pull it over their head.
And like rub their back, tell them that it's, you know, that it's okay, caress them a bit, you know, not sexually, but just a little bit to let them know that they're loved. Come on now.
So this is when good-hearted people have misguided ideas and put them into films. I gotcha. Well, that's been our show. We've talked about a lot of films this week. Like I said, we've tried to catch up with 2023. We're going to move on after next week's show to new films, but we do have one more look back at 2023 next week. But before we get to that, we want to hear from people who are on the show today what they have that they want people to turn their eyes and ears to. So what have you got to plug, folks? Todd, let's start with you. What's going on the Forgotten Filmcast?
Actually been taking a little bit of a holiday break here, but there'll be new episodes coming up soon. Just recorded one yesterday, so it should be hitting, I don't know, either next week or the following week. Where I'm joined by Lee Grice from the Never Seen podcast, where we're talking about a 1978 film called Warlords of Atlantis. And then there'll be more episodes following. So,
Howard, what's on your agenda that everybody should be looking at?
Well, I've been a bit behind, but the latest pop art one was with Jay Clewitt, of course. He's my annual Christmas guest, and where we discussed Wind Chill and Dead End, two movies that suggest that the only thing more horrifying going home for the holidays is the actual trip home for the holidays. After this, it will be The Verne, where we're going to talk May, December, the movie that's now on Facebook, along with The Dream of Passion, which are both about actors doing research for roles so they find someone similar. Todd then comes with The Fantastic Mr. Fox and Straight Time, about characters who get out of jail and try to go straight. But, and then after that, you and I have to talk, Richard, because you're doing my Valentine's Day episode.
Yeah, we got to catch up with that. That's coming soon. Yeah. James, I know that you don't like to plug stuff on your blogging site. You're welcome to do so if you want, but I do know that you put a film up for Movie of the Month, and I want to remind everybody to go to the LAM site to vote for Movie of the Month. Why don't you tell us why we should vote for the one that you've put up?
Again? Only Angels Have Wings. Howard Hawks. Ultimate Howard Hawks movie. And still think it's great. Todd, I wanted to talk about, because I was so frustrated there was never a movie of the month, Todd, I wanted to put it on Forgotten Filmcast, and you said, no, it's too popular. Okay. Well, it still remains one of my favorite movies of all time that I can watch. And if you put it in front of my face, I will remain immobile at watching it for until it ends, and I'll go, can we see it again?
Well, that, I think, is a ringing endorsement. Anytime you want to see a film again immediately after you've seen it, that sounds to me like it's a good movie. I will mention Movie Rob left us a little bit earlier, but he's put up The Great Escape for people to vote for, although I think that he covered it very extensively on his Great Escape Minute. But we could talk about it again if people want to vote for it. Aaron Neuwirth has put up Rumble in the Bronx, the Jackie Chan film. And I'll tell you what, that was kind of my gateway drug to Jackie Chan. Howard, you've got a film to promote poll as well. You want to tell us about it?
Well, it's called The American Astronaut. I've tried to get it up a couple of times. It won the major award at Sundance the year it came out. I'll just say it is a black and white science fiction Western musical. What else could you possibly want?
You've made it
it's
sound
really good.
A director's
made it sound very interesting. Yes.
Yes.
And Tony Coogan put up Mary and Max, which we talked about briefly when we did the Chicken Run show, because it is a claymation, stop-motion kind of film. I don't know if it's a full-length feature or not, but that's a possibility for you to vote for. And Heather Baxendale-Walsh suggested that people vote for Dread from 2012 with Carl Urban. So all of those films are available for you to vote for. Make sure you do your voting early. I'm not sure when it's going to close, but I think our show for Movie of the Month is supposed to be January 21st, somewhere in there. So it'll probably close the week before that. Short turnaround time on this vote, folks. Make sure that you vote for those kinds of things. Let's see. Who else do we need to hear from? Nicole, have you got something that you want us to see or hear?
Yes, two things. Speaking of voting and polls, I already did my vote for the Over on the Lamb cast so that I could get that in early. But I've also curated a collection of short films for a festival showcase called the Short Film Slam that presented by the MATLAB Post. It features around one dozen short films that range in length from 2 minutes to 27 minutes, and viewers can stream the films online and cast a vote for their favorite films among different genres, representing several countries from the U.S. to Poland, Australia, France, Taiwan, Spain, and several other countries in between. So anyone listening who wants tickets to that are welcome to go to my site to grab one. If you are a member of the LAM, you could also, reach out and I can, send you further links or info for that. And I also do plan on getting back into my reviews. I posted one or two, I think, this year, maybe, movie reviews, but I have a series called In the Nutshell where I challenge myself to try to review a movie in 140 words or less. I have not succeeded in doing that this year, but I do plan on posting a review of Ferrari, which includes some additional thoughts that I didn't cover here. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, thank you. And Thomas, obviously you're going to have a bucket load of stuff that you're talking about on your site. And tell us what we should be turning our eyes to.
Yes, obviously. I have been on a bit of a hiatus lately, but I am working on new things. I actually, by the time this posts, I will have the inaugural episode of this monthly series I'm doing with a friend of mine called Snubbed. We are going to look back on a particular year in a particular category and say why the Academy got it wrong and correct it. It's kind of a fun opportunity to look back on Oscar nominees and winners with the benefit of hindsight and get a better idea of maybe what should have won that year, especially with the context of the years that have happened between then and now. And the so that's I like I said, I'll have the first episode of that published by the time this is up online, so you can go check that out on my website. And then of course I have Sundance coming up, so I'll be going out to Park City to cover Sundance once again, and the lineup this year is looking pretty stellar. So I'm super excited to get out there and cover films and once again be in the wonderful, snowy, and buzzing Park City.
But you're going to leave your snowboard at home because the films are all intriguing.
I will be leaving my snowboard at home, although I it would be nice if everyone did. Transportation would be a lot easier. If we can just close snowboarding and skiing for the week that Sundance happens, that would be great. But
make it easier to get around the town, huh?
It would, it would. But no, it's always a good time. And so I'll be going with two other For Real team members. And it's going to be a good time. So we'll be having content coming out during the festival and then, of course, in the weeks following.
All right. And on my site, I'll have a look back at 2023 for all kinds of reasons. I went to the movies quite a bit. It's interesting. I saw 120. I went to the theater 120 times this year. Exactly 60 of them were new films, and 60 of them were revisits to classic and older films. So I had a good year, and I've got posts on all those things. But I'm going to do a little statistical analysis. We'll talk about some films that have been neglected and needed a little bit more attention and ought to be cultivated a bit. That end of the year post will be going up at the end of the year. Actually, it'll go up probably the first day of the new year. So keep your eyes open for that. Well, I want to thank everybody for joining us this week. It was an interesting show. We caught up with a lot of things. Our shopping carts are full. Hopefully your credit card is not declined at the cash register when you're on the way out. Just tap and you'll be on your way. Thanks, everybody. Have a good new year.
Onward and upward.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everyone.
You've been listening to the Lambcast. If you have an idea for a show or would like to join us on the Lambcast, contact us at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Find us on Facebook, just search for Lambcast, or on Twitter, at Lambcast. The Lamb site can be found at largeassmovieblogs.com, and please head over to iTunes to leave us a review.
Go to hell! Go to hell.
Be careful, it could go off for like no reason.